And welcome to Outbeat Collage Out in the Arts. I'm Michaela Kennan here live in the KRCB studios with my co-host Gary Carnevale, our engineer Mary Moore Campagna, and we have a wonderful, exciting show in store for you this evening. We are joined by Napa winemakers Dana Sabin and Larissa Stevenson. They produce the very first LGBT wine label here in Sonoma County. And with a little bit of luck, we'll hear from Rick Dean. He's the executive director of Face to Face, the Sonoma County AIDS Network. He will be here to talk to us about their upcoming fundraiser, Art for Life. So sit back for an hour of talk about art, good food, good wine. First up, let's go to Greg Moralia with Outbeat Radio News and Calendar.
I have found Outbeat Radio News, your source for LGBT news from the North Bay and beyond.
Good evening, this is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for this Sunday, August 18th, 2013. And this week in California, Governor Jerry Brown signed into law groundbreaking legislation expanding anti-discrimination protections for transgender students in public elementary and secondary schools. The new legislation mandates that schools respect the gender identity of trans students by allowing them equal access to sports teams, programs, and facilities associated with their gender. Assembly Bill 1266 is the first of its kind nationwide and expands upon existing anti-discrimination protections to help schools implement policies that support and affirm trans students. It builds upon national momentum to respect trans students, including a ruling earlier this year from the Colorado Civil Rights Division, determining that a trans first grader must be allowed to access the girls' bathroom at her elementary school near Colorado Springs. The bill passed both the state Senate and Assembly last month, despite opposition from right-wing and religious groups that claim the legislation would allow boys to shower with girls and lead to students randomly using whatever bathroom they felt like on a given day. California's new law takes effect January 1st. And on Wednesday this week, the California Supreme Court refused to revive Proposition 8, ending the last remaining legal challenge to same-sex marriage in California. Meeting in closed session, the state high court rejected arguments by Protect Marriage, Proposition 8's sponsors, that only an appellate court could overturn a state law. Federal Court Judge Vaughn Walker declared Proposition 8 unconstitutional in 2010, and state officials refused to appeal. Protect Marriage did appeal, but the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in June that initiative sponsors have no right to defend their measures in federal court. The Supreme Court's decision then left in place the final decision by now-retired Judge Vaughn Walker. In its challenge before the state's highest court, Protect Marriage argued that a single judge lacked the authority to overturn a state constitutional amendment. A county clerk from San Diego also asked the court to decide whether Proposition 8 remained valid, but withdrew his request after failing to win support from other counties. At last, Prop 8 appears to be dead for good. And here locally, a judge postponed consideration of a Sebastopol woman's petition for legal recognition of her marriage to her late partner, which was held 6 days before the U.S. Supreme Court restored the right for same-sex couples to wed in California. Judge Nancy Case Schaefer is seeking additional legal input from the lawyer handling the case before determining whether to declare the marriage valid. Stacy Schuett and Leslie Tabota Hall exchanged vows on June 19th, 1 day before Tabota Hall succumbed to cancer, and a week before the U.S. Supreme Court struck down Proposition 8, which had prevented the couple from marrying earlier. At stake, in part, are survivor benefits, which Schuett and the couple's two children would be eligible for if the marriage is validated. Now here's your calendar of events for the coming week. On Monday, August 19th, and every Monday at 5:30 p.m., the Petaluma Health Center will host an LGBT support group at 1179 North McDowell Boulevard in Petaluma. On Monday, August 19th, from 7 to 8:30 p.m., Jesse's parent support group will meet at the Positive Images Center, 312 Chin Street in Santa Rosa. And on Tuesday, August 20th, from 6 to 7:30 p.m., the trans group will meet at the Positive Images Center. On Wednesday, August 21st, at 4:40 p.m., Fountain Grove Lodge, the country's first luxury LGBT retirement community, will host a professional's mixer, sip and nibble, and enjoy a tour of the new community. You can learn more at fountaingrovelodge.com. And on Thursday, August 27th, from 9:30 to 11 a.m., Spectrum will host the Novato Senior Breakfast at Sam's Place, 1545 South Novato Boulevard in Novato. And also on Thursday at 7 p.m., Face-to-Face Film Series presents Call Me Kuchu, Uganda Gay Activists Fight for Their Lives. This will take place at the Rialta Cinema, 6868 McKinley Street in Sebastopol. And finally, on Friday, August 23rd, from noon to 2 p.m., Food for Thought, the Sonoma County AIDS Food Bank, will host its Positive Women's Group, 6550 Railroad Ave in Forestville. For more information about local LGBT events happening here in the North Bay, go to gaysonoma.com. And if you have news or an event you'd like to share with our listeners, be sure to tell us about it by going to our own website at outbeatnews.com. And be sure to follow us all week long on Facebook and Twitter for the latest LGBT news and information from here in the North Bay and beyond. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia. Now back to Outbeat Collage with Gary Carnevale and Michaela Kennan.
Outbeat Radio News, your source for LGBT news from the North Bay and beyond.
Dana Sabin and Larissa Stevenson met cute in Chicago, but moved to the wine country 5 years ago and started their own wine business. Stand Tall Wines produces a fabulous Pinot Noir. Their first wine label also marked another most important first. Genetic is the first LGBTQ wine label ever produced. Welcome to Outbeat Collage, Larissa and Dana.
Thank you.
Welcome, welcome. It's very great to have you on board here, especially since normally we follow up with Michelle Anna Jordan, who always leaves us drooling because she has empty wine bottles and good food hanging around, and we never get any. So it's much, much our pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you.
So start at the beginning. Tell us about your lives in the Windy City. You are transplants here to California. How did you first meet?
We first met actually both playing for North Shore women's rugby team. She was at practice for one of her first practices, and I had been released from the Midwest rugby team to go back to play with the city team, and of course had done the smart thing and bought a puppy in order to find a woman, and left the car, was crossing the parking lot, going to the shoreline to go to practice, and Lincoln, now our dog, ran right up to her while she was standing underneath the tree.
Well, and you remember what I was wearing, too.
Oh, I totally remember what she was wearing. Found out later why she was wearing those colors, because she's colorblind, actually, because I couldn't understand why she was wearing a light blue aqua shirt, pretty much, with red shorts. And I was a little concerned at that at first. But Lincoln liked her, so, just started watching her kind of from that point. Not in soccer mode, but kind of paying attention. So
I was pretty new to rugby, and a month in. So she was kind of watching me from afar, and I didn't quite notice her right off the bat. And during one of the rugby practices, we were doing drills, and I got tackled from behind and broke my wrist. And so she's a kinesiologist, and so she's like, well, I have someone you can go to get that checked out. And I found out the next day when I went to the OT, and then she referred me to a doctor, that my wrist was broken. And so she asked me out on a date to go for coffee.
We had to talk about the fracture, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then I think the next day after that, she asked me to come to her
weirdly
her
to
salon,
my haircut.
Which was like down the street from my house, my apartment, and to put my hair up, because I couldn't put my hair up because I was in a thumb cast.
Yeah. Why not?
It's a perfect reason to go drink coffee.
Exactly. And then come to my haircut. My hairstylist put your hair up. Yeah. Not a problem. Don't have to wear a hat for one day.
And then we've been together since then. We haven't really, kind of just went right in.
Yes.
Like all lesbians,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Well, U-Haul didn't happen until about 10 months later.
10 months later.
So we started with the dog. So.
We started with the dog, yeah. I think that's a smart way to try and find somebody.
Wow.
Use
and
a puppy.
So how long have you been together then?
Almost 6 years.
Yes.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. In September, it'll be 6 years.
Congratulations.
Nice. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
So when did you first discuss moving to California?
Well, I had a job opportunity out here in St. Helena working for the school district. And so I could do the interview over my spring break back in Chicago from work. And I was like, Larissa, come with me and let me know what you think, because if you like it, then maybe we'll move out there. And we were getting sick of the Chicago winters, and it was just the perfect timing. So she liked it, and we made the move when I got the job.
Yes. Yeah, about 10 months after we got together.
Yes.
That's wow. when the U-Haul came out.
It was quite fast.
Really?
We, you know, I don't know. My parents kind of finally realized, oh, we love her, but I don't think they realized it was serious until I was like, and we're moving to California. Right. And my parents know that I don't really go anywhere unless it's something important. So we made the move in at the end of July, drove across country with a couple of friends, and that was a fun 3-day trip.
Right.
Full of a lot of wonderful memories and very long driving days.
With
and
an 80-pound dog on one of our laps.
Dad does not like, he gets car sick. You know, he just hops on your lap in the front seat. Cute. And you're like, you are 80 pounds, mister. What are you doing?
What kind of dog?
He is an Australian cow dog, blue heeler.
Aww.
Mixed with American Staffordshire Terrier.
Wow. So it's like all muscle.
Yeah.
Solid kid. Yeah.
My goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Nebraska is an awfully long state to drive across to.
Oh, it is. So is Kansas.
Did he want to herd the cows on the way around?
We definitely had the window down most of the time so he could enjoy all the different smells. And, he was a city dog at first. Well, actually, I found him online from a rescue group just outside of San Antonio, Texas. Mm. And flew him to Chicago when he was 13 weeks. So he did kind of come from the country at first, and then was a city dog, was a very, very good city dog. And then we moved out here, and he did love Colorado. He loves the mountains and just being in there. So it was a little hard to pull him away from Boulder at first when we spent the first night there. But he did not like Utah. That's okay.
He's a political dog.
He's a political dog. He was like, are we out of here yet? We should go now. But he's definitely grown fond of California. He loves Grandma and Grandpa's 9 acres to run around.
Wow.
And to him, it's his property. Mm-hmm. And we are on borrowed time there, you know. But
That's the way it should be.
It should be. You know, it's amazing how fast they flip over into a working animal when they're on a large piece of property. Especially when there are feral cats on the property, and they feel the need to actually get rid of those feral cats.
Oh, my.
I know. So it's a joy to try and keep him from chasing them everywhere. Mm. So, yeah.
So Dana, so you have your parents now live out here.
Mm-hmm.
We'll start there. Your parents live out here. They actually own Sabina Vineyards in St. Helena, which is where your wine genetic is produced. But before we talk about that, Larissa, you are a kinesiologist. Dana, you are, by profession,
a social worker.
A social worker.
Mm-hmm.
Because that it kind of relates into the label and the name of the wine and so on and so forth.
We're born this way. We did
Very
not
good.
Choose this. But we're glad we
As are. A social worker, what population do you work with?
So I work in St. Helena, K-5. And then St. Helena, it's in the school, it's about 50% Caucasian, 50% Latino.
Hmm.
I think the numbers are actually growing for the Latino population in our school. I think that in my two schools I work with, I think it's closer to 60%. And, you know, the socioeconomic status, you know, it's about the same, I think, 50-50, and it's like pretty extreme in St. Helena. It's like you're either like the wine owners super rich, or you're the workers in the wineries, and you're just getting by.
Right.
There's not a huge middle class there, really, in St. Helena, and it's impossible to live there unless you have tons of money, really. And
which is why we live in Napa.
It's more affordable.
So what did you think coming from a big urban center, obviously with a huge LGBT community, to Napa County?
Where there's like 6 of us. And we're all in the coffee shops.
Why are there so few in Napa? And there's so many LGBT folks in Sonoma County, and Napa seems to be much smaller.
I think it might be like the role of the government in Sonoma County. I think they're much more they show, like, even on, the, I think, your
Chamber of Commerce,
page, I mean, there's this total acceptance on those pages, and you don't see that. I mean, this year was the first time in Napa where they showed the rainbow flags on the light poles for Pride Week, which was a huge deal, which I guess, you know, has never happened before. And so when you have this kind of, it's almost like this underground LGBTQ scene in Napa Valley or Napa County that I think is more open, you know, out in Sonoma County. But going back to that first thought we had when we, like, moved here, I was like, should we go back?
And it really has just been the last 5 years that the community has sort of become, LGBT community in Napa County has become more cohesive. There was a, I think there were still two groups. I mean, there's been Pride for, they've had a Pride event for, I think, 7 or 8 years.
I think it's kind of growing as Napa, downtown Napa is actually starting to grow. I think it makes a difference when the businesses are popping up, the restaurants are popping up. Whether or not they stay open, you know, we keep our fingers crossed. But I think it, as it grows, it gives more chance to come and visit, to actually feel a little bit more welcome, have more places to go to as opposed to just wineries. So I think that helps tremendously.
Have you been able to meet other LGBT business owners in Napa County? Have you made that connection? Or
A few of them. Two gentlemen, I'm blanking on their names right now. They own a bed and breakfast up in Calistoga.
And then we know the Barber's Q.
Yeah, Barber's Q.
And out in the vineyard.
Out in the vineyards.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then, I mean, on the board of the LGBTQ Connections, I've met, you know, more through that. But it's a slow process.
Right.
Yeah.
Have either of you experienced any kind of issues around the workplace?
Well, we're kind of, I mean, yes, in some ways, I don't know. It's, you know, it's kind of tough sometimes, but for the most part, most of our coworkers are quite, you know, okay with it. I have a tendency of being out and open right away. I joke that I'm a 100-footer, you know, but, I kind of do it. I'm out with my clients, I'm out at work. If somebody has a problem with it, I have no problem. Just, you know, if you want to work with me, you can. If you don't want to, you can, you know, you can pick somebody else that you can work with. That's fine. That's how you are. But I do work, for a Catholic hospital. And, so sometimes, you know, you question some things when decisions are made and when something doesn't happen.
Right.
So, but for the most part, they've been fairly accepting. So,
as it should be.
As it should be.
So let's talk a little bit about, so Dana, your parents are the winery owners. How long have they been in business?
Let's see. They, I think they bought the property in 2002. And my dad had this kind of vision. He would retire and move to Napa Valley.
Just
and,
like the TV commercial.
Yes, and own a winery and, you know, have it make enough money so he could pay for everything and he doesn't have to worry anymore. And he pretty quickly figured out that's not how it works. And they released their first wine cab in 2006.
And they had the Merlot in 2004.
Oh, yeah, they had a Merlot, but they didn't widely release that. They were released. They were waiting. They released the Merlot, waiting for the cab grapes. And so,
it was a phenomenal Merlot.
It was great.
Really good.
In 2006, they released their first cab, and they've been releasing every year since. They brought in the Pinot in, I think, 2008. And it's, you know, it's a small little boutique winery, and, you know, they're starting to really build their business better now than ever before. This is probably their best year of production and sales, and, you know, and it's tough business. So
her father's very happy when he goes, "I broke even."
Yes,
the winery. It's a good month of sales.
He breaks even. He's happy.
Right. Yeah.
So then, at what point did the two of you decide that maybe you wanted to dip a foot in the vat, so to speak, and try your own.
Our pinky toes. Yeah. we were kind of, I had the idea a few years ago that somebody needs to do an LGBTQ label. They're not out there. Hey, come on, take a risk. You know, I know everybody is constantly trying to create labels for the masses and please everybody, but let's face it, if you know, not everybody's palette is the same, and a lot of us are drawn to certain labels when it comes to shelves. I know I love walking down liquor, beer, and wine aisles and looking at all the various labels. So we kind of, I had the idea for a couple of years, Dana and I were talking about it, and her father offered us, well, we kind of started to come up with the idea of the label, and then we were vacationing in Seattle over a year ago. And her father called us when we were up in Seattle. He's just like, you know, I have some extra Pinot grapes coming this year. Would you like to do your own label finally? And so we jumped on the opportunity. Could not pass that up. It's such a wonderful wine. And that's kind of how it got started. So a little over a year ago, first released in September 2012. So, yeah. Did I forget anything?
I mean, I think also the other thing we really wanted, because we're both kind of in these helping professions, we always felt like if you're in a business and you have the abilities, you should give back to these organizations that support causes that you believe in. So we pretty quickly were like, well, if we're going to have this label, we're definitely going to give what we can to another organization that's working hard. So that's kind of how we kind of conceptualized the whole idea of the wine.
And each label will be different. The next label, when we come up with the funds to do it, will be the actual Stand Tall label. And then after that, we'll have other labels for various groups. We won't be just doing only labels for LGBTQ. We research companies before we make purchases from them. So, you know, we're hoping to kind of be one of those stand-up companies, which is why we wanted, why we came up with the name Stand Tall Wine Company, because we are standing up for issues. So each label will be different. So.
And the label's beautiful.
Thank you.
Who designed it?
We came up with the idea, and her sister, Laura,
actually designed it.
Beautiful. Yep. Rainbow flag right there on the label.
Gotta love those genetic sequences.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, it's very nice. So it's actually, it's subtle, but it's not so subtle. It's really right out there, because the label itself is basically in black and white. And then one of the little markers is, of course, the rainbow.
Yes.
So it's a striking label.
Thank you.
To the very, very least.
Thank you very much.
And Genetic is the name, Genetic. Talk to us a little bit about becoming winemakers, you know, going from just being the consumer to saying, well, okay, I think we can actually get some grapes and put them in storage tanks and, you know, bottle them and, or crush them and bottle them. And
oh, my goodness, we're not even winemakers yet. We've done none of that.
We've watched it.
We have
really
watched
well.
It happen. Her father has a winemaker that so far has done everything. We both work a lot of hours during the week, that is, and we don't know how to do that yet. And we're reading and we're learning, and we hope to help out with future harvests as soon as we get past our wedding in September. But we have not actually done it ourselves. So we like to just be called vintners currently. And hope within the next couple of years to learn how to do it ourselves so we can do everything. But right now, her father's winemaker.
So
he doesn't.
Talk about your own process of developing a palate, learning to appreciate the nuances of wine. This is a very lovely Pinot, by the way. We're going to actually clink a glass here. Fine glass. But it's a fabulous Pinot. It's got, you know, lovely, lovely fruit to it. It is sourced out of the Willamette Valley, so it's an Oregon Pinot. Beautiful pepper. I love the pepper.
Thank you.
On the finish. And a nice round mouthfeel.
Thank you.
To the wine. And not too heavy, but it's not a light wine either. It's got a lot of stuff going on.
Well, we want to confuse the palate just a little bit, make you it linger, and you have to think about it for a little bit longer.
Well, and that you do. That's the mark of a good wine. But how did you get to a point, and yes, you know, Dana, growing up in a winemaking family, I'm sure you learned things along the way, but talk about how one starts to appreciate the different nuances. What do you look for in a wine? What do you, is it personal palate? Is it the quality of the wine itself? What was your process?
I think your family drank a lot of vodka to figure out the wine company.
For me, I think I was always attracted to the subtler wines. The cabs were a little too always heavy for me, and we seemed to grow, like, my parents for some reason in the beginning were drinking lots of cabs, and I was like, oh, what is this? I don't like wine. It's just, this isn't good. And then as they got older and as I got older, my mom really started drinking a lot of Pinot, and I kind of, if I was going to drink a red wine, that's kind of what I always was drawn to, because I knew it was a drinkable wine. I can sit there and I can sip on it, and I didn't need to pair it always with a food product that will bring out like the flavors of the wine. I could just enjoy the nice smoothness of it, and without that harsh, dry, tannic taste at the end, which I just never was drawn to. So I think when we had the opportunity to do a Pinot, I like that, because I like that kind of wine. I think it's very accessible to people.
And it goes with a lot of different types of food, which is nice.
And what about you, Larissa? How did
I fall into the... I grew up in the restaurant business, actually. Oh, my family used to own restaurants in Kansas City, Stevens' Apple Farm Restaurant. And so I was kind of always pouring it for others and learning a little bit as I went. But we used to produce cider as well from our orchards, and an apple wine, which, by the way, tastes nothing like this.
My goodness,
it's like you become a diabetic after you drink apple wine. type 2 insulin and everything. Here we go. The wonderful thing, I mean, your palate definitely develops the more you drink, and I definitely enjoy trying wines from grapes that I've never even heard of, and we'll look for those. And you're starting to see more of the wineries in California also popping up with getting some of those grapes out there. None of them really are coming to mind right now because I'm bad with names, but I love Pinot Noirs, but I'm really drawn also to Heritage Zinfandel. And so that is another one that I definitely enjoy. I love the old vine. It's very good. Mm-hmm. It has, you know, years and years behind the flavor profile. And hope to also sometime jump into that. But developing the palate, it's for sure just trial and error, tasting, more tasting, lots of liquor, lots of beer. So avoid the Brett for the wine, but definitely throw the Brett in my beer. I'm really happy with the Brett in my beer. Gotta love the sour ales. So
Now also you're producing a Pinot Noir that is coming out of the Willamette Valley in Oregon, which is, of course, you know, as world renowned as our own Russian River is. What have you found to be the difference between a solid Oregon Pinot versus our Russian River Pinots?
I honestly think that because of the cooler weather, that it definitely keeps them... The flavor seems to be a little... I mean, they grab you, but they don't seem to be overpowering like some of the California Pinot Noirs are. So I like you were describing how it kind of fills up your mouth, but yet you don't seem to... you don't have the alcohol lingering there, do you? Yeah. So that's what I tend to find more from the Oregon side. And I think that that's definitely due to the weather. Obviously, the soils, the terroir makes a huge difference. But Russian River has some phenomenal Pinots. But I do believe often they tend to be a little bit heavier. So.
Well, and that's actually very right on point. People tend to develop a local palate, for one. And having lived in Oregon and having had a fair share of Oregon Pinots, I became enamored with Russian River Pinots because they were more full-bodied, much more fruit-forward, much more mouth-filling thinking. And by comparison, making some of the Oregon Pinots seem a little light on the palate. So it was like the better world of, wow, here's a Pinot, but boy, it drinks like a cab or, you know, a big Merlot or maybe even a Zinfandel. My palate moves on, you know, as you mature and you age with your palate preferences. I prefer the lighter wines at this point. And I find these very similar to the Carneros region, you know, because actually Carneros has a microclimate very similar to the Oregon climate.
Yes.
Gets a lot of influence from the bay coming up. And the wines that you're going to get out of the Carneros, the Pinots out of Carneros, are going to taste much more like the Oregon Pinots as opposed to the Russian River.
Yes.
So this is a nice example. And there's some other wineries around, too, that source their grapes from the Northwest. So, you know, it's nice to have the access to all of it.
Yeah.
And this is, again, a lovely Pinot. It's a real versatile Pinot in that I find it to be very accessible as a drinking wine, but also would stand up nicely to, you know, a nice steak on the grill. Ah. It doesn't have to be a, you know, big hunk of chuck roast or anything or something like that, but it would go real well with just a nice tri-tip. Excellent with pork.
So we're grilling after this?
Yeah.
We got
sounds fine to me. Yeah. Yeah. Ribs.
That's cool. Great. I only had salad so far. I'm still hungry.
Okay. Great wood wine. But you've done a fantastic job. You know, it's lovely, lovely raspberry color. It's got some nice,
the color's amazing.
Nice, beautiful legs in it, as they say. But it is not a heavy wine, and yet it drinks like it's got a nice fullness on the palate. So well done, first time out.
Thank you. It was a winemaker.
Yeah, but you know what? Your inspiration is behind it and a lot of your intention. So
thank you.
That's what, you know, there's a lot of love in that.
So I think we'll take a little break. We're having a schedule change. I don't think Rick Dean will be joining us tonight.
Okay.
So we'll continue with Dana and Larissa. Right after a little musical break, we'll continue with the wine theme with a delightful song by Joan Armatrading from her self-titled 1976 disc. This is Water with the Wine.
Met him on a Monday, and he said he loved me so. He walked me to my door before I knew it to my living room. I thought there was no need for worry when he took me in his arms. Drank some whiskey, hung his coat upon the stand. That's when the music started. I heard the lights ring. I stumbled on a lost shoe. Fever started. This man was getting high. I got no strength to make him stop. I guess it's too late, but I'll know next time to mix some water with the wine. Sun came pouring in at five upon my face. I felt the taste of last night's love upon my lips. I wasn't sure if I attempted or if not, but there across the pillow was the face I had run by. That's when he said he loved me. Could be the truth this time. He put his arms about me. Fever started. This man was getting high. I've got no strength to make him stop. I guess it's too late, but I'll know next time to make some more with the wine. Yada, 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 love. Too late, but I'll know next time to make some water with.
Welcome back to Outbeat Collage, Out in the Arts. I'm Gary Carnevale here with Michaela Kennan and Mary Marcapagna, our engineer, and also the lovely ladies, women from Stand Tall Wines, here to talk about their great Pinot Noir, Genetic.
Genetic. We were just discussing pizza during the musical break because we're all actually transplants from the Midwest coming out here. Oh. And and our engineer is shaking her head. Yeah, well, you can be the local girl. But.
Really?
Anyway.
It happens once in a while.
Let's talk a little bit about the foods that you think pair well with this wine.
Oh, my goodness. A lot of vegetarian dishes would, I honestly can't think of a vegetarian dish that would not go well. Definitely cod would go marvelously with it. What do you think?
I'm drawing a blank. I'm never good with like the food pairing thing. I'm like the worst person to ask about that because I'm like, okay, this sounds good. Let me see. I like chocolate and cheese with my wine. That's like the staple.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I don't really think above that, like to the meal portion of things. I can say what I like beer with food. If you want to go and like beer.
What do you like in a beer?
Oh, my goodness. IPAs for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know what? That's not unusual. There are tons of winemakers that drink and sip wine all day.
Mm.
When they go home, what do? They have beer.
Yes.
They have good beer. I kid you not.
For some odd reason, it does a marvelous job of just cleansing the palate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And making everything that you just went through that day worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I can wake up till tomorrow. Okay. I'll do it again. Okay. Not a problem. What?
4:30. You mentioned pairing it with cod. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons it pairs well with cod is because it's a firmer, meatier fish.
Yes.
And it would be able to stand up to this wine. So
stand tall next
to it. It would stand tall to probably would.
Do fishes stand tall?
Yeah, there you go. But of course, any kind of a firm, this would be an excellent salmon wine as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, and pork, of course. Mm-hmm. Be a great rib wine.
Mm.
Go well with polenta.
Ribs in a wine.
Yeah. Carson's ribs. Oh. Still Carson's in Chicago?
Yeah.
See, I'm bringing up all this. we're having foodie flashbacks.
We are.
And you were talking deep dish pizza. What makes Chicago pizza unique?
Everything's below the sauce.
Yeah. The sauce just piles up and it's like tomato sauce heaven. And it's like, it's just in the crust. It's this hearty crust that you just don't get anywhere. It's like solid. You know, you can throw it against the wall and it won't break.
Yeah, the only pie that has a greater depth than Chicago deep dish pizza would be Cindy Paulson's lemon lime meringue pie.
Wow.
That's taller than Chicago deep dish. Otherwise, there's no other pie that's deeper than that. You could swim in it if you wanted to, if they made one big enough. Otherwise, you know. It's just phenomenal. One piece fills you up. It's great.
Yeah.
You have so much left over
right.
for the next day. Breakfast, lunch, dinner.
I used to go to a place that did an upside down pizza.
Oh.
Do you remember that? It was in Lincoln Park.
Yes.
It was like
pizza
soup.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
I went there one time.
It was insane. It was in my neighborhood, so I used to go a lot.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't know if I really liked it enough to keep going back, but it was an interesting experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I'll give them credit for that.
Right.
I don't think anyone else would think about doing that.
Like an upside down cake. It was really strange.
And there was always a line. It was popular. Mm-hmm. People wanted to go there.
Is this at like 2 a.m. when everybody's hungover already?
No. Like dinner time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So they started drinking at lunch.
Yeah.
Stick it to that.
Well, it's a late night city.
Oh, my goodness.
That's what we miss.
It bars up until 4 a.m. If they wanted to keep staying open, all they had to do was start to serve breakfast.
Yeah. The best was the weird rule on Saturday nights where all the 2 a.m. bars moved to 3 a.m.
Right.
And all the 5 a.m. bar, 4 a.m. bars went to 5 a.m.
Yep.
I've never heard of that in any other city ever. But it's like there's this weird ordinance where you keep your bar open 1 hour later on Saturday nights. Here you have to be like, okay, it's 9 o'clock. We haven't eaten dinner yet.
Last call, folks.
We're
last call.
Uh-oh.
It's pretty sad how early everything closes. When we first moved here, it'd be like 4 p.m. And I'm like, we should go to the grocery stores. And Dana's like, everything's closed. It's 4 p.m.
Especially in Epicani. Yeah. Especially out here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Luckily, it's open now till about 6.
So. Enough to pick up eggs for breakfast the next morning.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Or go to the neighbors across the street. Did your chickens happen to have any leftover eggs today, please?
There you go.
Because they were great yesterday. I would like to please have 2 more eggs. So
what time did you realize that this wine would be the very first LGBT wine label? Did you know that going in, or was it something you learned later?
We were really hoping it was going to be, and we still mm-hmm. think it is. We haven't found somebody that has beaten us on it. Egalite like came out and said, hey, we did the very first, and mm-hmm. we're like, no, you didn't.
Right.
We beat you. And that allowed like so many doors to open, actually, because they had thrown out, you know, PR, you know, put it out and everything. It was on Huffington Post and everything, mm-hmm. and I started contacting the editors saying, we released ours in September 2012. And so we got a blog on Huffington Post, which I should write another blog for them.
After that one.
Autostraddle, you know, checked us out and did an interview with us. And a tasting panel mentioned us. They're waiting for us to be sold in a bar or in a restaurant. So that way they can do an on-site interview. So that's pretty cool that they're wanting to support us. It's opened a couple doors just because somebody didn't really research.
Right.
So we got a little lucky on that one.
And we got lucky with the AP press.
Oh, yes. AP press.
We didn't expect that at all.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a pretty huge deal. And I think we went into it thinking, well, let's just have this label
mm-hmm.
that shows like the support that we give to this community, and let's just see what happens, and let's focus in on this community, because it was so, we personally felt like it was so neglected in Napa County that we had to do something.
Mm-hmm.
So
have you run across any obstacles, or let's focus on the positive, the rewards of being women vintners in a male dominated industry?
We both look good in plaid.
Sure.
And that is the vintner uniform.
Although tonight
lucky.
They're in Chicago black.
We are. Oh, my goodness. We do not always dress the same.
Pay attention before we leave the door. The house. Holy.
It's like we share a bedroom. Why would we walk out wearing the same thing? This is blindside.
But you share a closet.
Yes.
We do.
You do.
She wears almost everything that I have. It's amazing.
Well, you said she's colorblind. She doesn't know the difference.
She doesn't know the difference. Yeah. I think our dog was even shaking his head as we left the house. He was like, faux pas.
Are you going to wear that?
Exactly.
You sure you don't want to change before you leave?
Exactly. Do I get a treat? You get a treat when we get back.
Have you connected at all with women, the women winemakers here? There is an organization of women winemakers here in, well, the North Bay. I think they're Sonoma County based. But that might be an organization that you want to kind of tap into.
Oh, yeah. I would love to.
So I'll see if I can get that information for you. There's a Women's Wine Network and all kinds of...
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Of women. There's many more women in the industry than you realize.
Yes.
Yeah.
Although, you know, those that kind of crawl their way to the top, it's a long road.
Yeah.
It is.
I felt like we haven't really hit like those obstacles as being women in the industry is because we're so small, and it's just the two of us. And so we're basically like, when we have some free time and we get a chance, we will, you know, work on some ideas for the business, but it's, you know, we don't really have this like big, large scale operation going. And so I don't think we're really like have our like flag on the market yet at all, and I think that's why we haven't really felt that. I think the obstacles we felt have more to do with just the day-to-day operations of trying to keep a business going
mm-hmm.
and keeping it, you know, afloat more than anything else.
And not to mention that you're working in other professions.
Yes. Yeah, we both have
full-time.
Yeah, I average about 50, 55 hours a week.
Wow.
So it's, and Dana works tons of hours herself. Mm-hmm. We have dog walkers full time for our dog for that middle of the day walk. He refers to one of them as mommy, number three.
Lincoln has three mommies.
He's got three mommies, three mommies. He's so lucky. It's definitely one of the hardships is learning as much as we possibly can with the little amount of time that we have. The goal is that hopefully we get things up and going and well enough along that I can end up working part-time in my current vocation. And then spend even more, you know, the other part of the time running the wine company. We currently sell direct to consumers, so we're not having to worry about distributors right now or anything like that, as much as we would like to worry about them. Mm-hmm. We would like to be in the restaurants and in the bars, but that is a matter of us being able to afford to switch licenses. We currently have the 85, and we'd like to switch over to the 1720. So whenever we can actually afford to do that, we will do that and hopefully be out further mm-hmm. into the market. I have a lot of friends and clients that are vintners and winemakers and work in the industry. And often, you know, when I'm either training them or we're just hanging out, you know, they have been marvelous about answering our questions and being extremely helpful. And each one of those people we... you know, are so grateful for and definitely give bottles of wine to. now that I think about it, I mean, I can think, God, yeah, there's, I honestly don't know of a lot of women that are winemakers. One woman that comes to mind, who is, very strong in the field is Janet Pagano. And she,
well, she's a vintner.
Yeah.
Manager.
Yeah, but she also was a winemaker and still is. Still, you know, does it. But Austin Peterson is the winemaker for Ovid, and they're at Ovid, and Elizabeth is also there, and she helps us with, like, you know, ideas for PR. And so, you know, they're very helpful. And it's her dad, obviously, and her mom gives us her opinions as well. I'm waiting for that text message.
We're going to have to come over to the Sonoma side at some point.
We are. Yes. Oh, my goodness. I plan on getting the Heritage Zinfandel from Sonoma. I already have the place picked out, the winemaker picked out, and everything, just waiting for the money to come through to be able to get that.
Okay, so. And another lady in who's queen of Zinfandel is Carol Shelton.
Oh.
You need to connect with Carol Shelton.
Okay. Okay.
She's one of the early, early pioneers of... particularly Zinfandel producing.
Yes.
And she's excellent. She knows her stuff.
Oh,
so
brilliant.
Look that up.
Cool.
You know, at some point, cause okay. she, especially if you want to get into Zin,
yes.
she'll be able to give you some great pointers.
Thank you.
So how can folks get their hands on a bottle or a case of this beautiful wine?
Well, we have this contraption that hooks up to our dog that is attached to this little red radio flyer wagon.
It just happens
it is
to
the
have
fastest delivery in Napa
Sweet.
Ever. he uses GPS and everything. Just
he takes credit cards too, right?
He does.
He's got the little
square credit card meter is hooked up to his leash.
Uh-huh.
I mean, occasionally we have to go with him because he gets distracted. He's like, "The store gives me treats."
There's food there.
If they're locals, we will drive it to their house. drive it to our house. He will be in the car with us.
But in all seriousness, you can get online on our website, standtallwine.com. And right now it's set up where you email us and we'll email you an order form. Or I think you actually can basically fill out the order form online and then email it to us and then we'll ship it to you.
Or drive it
if you're close by. Because shipping is super expensive. And so that's all we have right now. And unless you want to come and visit us, you can always come and visit, and we'll sell you directly right then.
Mm.
Are you working out of Sabina Wines at all? Or do you have a little storefront, little tasting room area?
No, we currently don't have it. So her parents have been very generous, and they've said that as long as the tasting doesn't interfere with their tastings, we can definitely do a tasting there. You guys should totally come over.
Oh.
Yeah. Beautiful views.
It'd be that'd be way cool.
Yeah.
I've been there. Have you been there?
No.
No.
It's right next to Belgris Mill.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yes. Oh, that's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. so we ought to do a little field trip.
Definitely.
Yeah. Outbeat on location.
I think it's a great idea.
As we kind of wind down the show, talk just a little bit about what you do with respect to the Napa LGBTQ connections.
So I'm on the advisory board of the nonprofit organization. And so I do a lot of volunteer work actually in the schools. That's kind of my area of expertise. Mm-hmm. And so when I got on the board, I worked a lot with Brody, who basically runs what was running. He recently left the position and to pursue another field. But we were doing a lot with the GSAs. And we actually did a lot with creating a survey to see, what is it like in the schools? Mm. Is there a lot of bullying, harassment of, LGBTQ identified teenagers? Mm. And so we spent a lot of time creating the survey, getting it out, analyzing the data, and then getting it back to the principals. And then being on the advisory committee, meeting once a month to talk about where the organization's going, where are the needs, where can we meet the needs. I mean, one of the big things is, do we need a space? Because there isn't. They're based out of Voices. Mm. And, do we need a gathering place in Napa Valley, Napa County? So we're in the process of trying to figure that out right now. But they've done a lot, really, just of outreach. They have, especially with youth, and then they have
a
senior citizen group that meets, I think, monthly or maybe bi-monthly.
Ian Stanley runs the show, and does a marvelous job.
Yes, he really does. Yeah. And, I mean, really, it's basically Ian and now Vanessa, who is the recent hire to replace Brody. And it's just the two of them with volunteers, mm-hmm. really. And that's how it goes. And there's support through On the Move, which is the organization that kind of oversees all mm-hmm. the other nonprofits in there. But it's amazing what they've done with such little manpower. I mm-hmm. mean,
because there's only six of us in the valley.
It can only grow. It can only grow and get better. And where it's going, the vision it has mm-hmm. I think it's great. And the things that we've been able to do mm-hmm. to bring visibility to Napa County is so huge. And mm-hmm. you think, with the rainbow flags in downtown during Pride Week or 2 weeks, really, mm-hmm. you think, it's just it's for people maybe think it's a small step, but for like that kid out there that is just figuring out who they are and they see that, it's like, okay, I'm accepted here. Okay. It feels good. And I think that's really important. Mm. And that's something that if it wasn't for this organization, I don't know if that would have happened as quickly. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Through connections, is there a sense of how many LGBT folks are in Napa County?
They say there should be about 11,000 mm-hmm. according to census data. I would love to meet 11,000 people
right.
that live in Napa County.
Well, your sister just relocated here about 2 months ago. So okay.
yeah,
so 11,001.
She's going to bring in like at least 2,000.
Yeah. Her friends keep coming to visit. They're going to relocate here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My sister is quite the social butterfly.
We're going to have to move
right.
out.
But
and the census really just sort of identifies couples, households with couples,
yes.
I think, because yeah. there's not, there still isn't a question,
yes.
are you gay?
Yes.
They just sort of come up with it, oh, there are two people who are who aren't related.
Yes. Oh. And I think there must have been another local county data, like maybe it was like a door-to-door mm-hmm. thing. So, Ian would definitely know like how he got the number, but
right.
the number is
oh yeah
11,000, mm-hmm. and I think the issue is bringing that group of people out and about in
right.
the valley. And there's some great people that have been working to do that through Pride or mm-hmm. through other social organizations in Napa County, but it's like pulling teeth to get some people to really mm-hmm. feel comfortable and
wow.
meet
right right. Mm-hmm.
Mm. For whatever reason, and that's something we're working on in connections all the time. It's like, well, how do we get how do we find these people and how do we get them to come to these events mm-hmm. so that, you know, we can be a community here.
Hmm. So how many people showed up to Pride this past year?
I don't know. I mean, there were so many events, and I think they were well attended, mm-hmm. better than last year. But
I think it seemed almost double compared to what it was last year.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I think there could be more attendance, too.
Right.
We went to about three events. Mm-hmm. And it was, I mean, there were at least 100 people at each event we went to, which I think that's pretty good for Napa.
Right, yeah. Right.
Sonoma probably has like five times as much.
Yeah.
So do you go to
you
Pride
are so
in the
lucky.
City?
We missed it this year, actually. We tend to go every couple of years.
Yeah.
As much as the San Francisco Pride Parade is, you know, very well mm-hmm. known and a lot of fun to go to, minus the crowds, we still hold... The Chicago Pride Parade is just phenomenal. The floats are just out of this world.
Yeah.
It's like they started planning, you know, each of those floats like 4 years prior.
And this year, wasn't it a million people?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
You just can't beat that. It's just so much fun. So every time we go
That's
to San
huge.
Francisco, we're like, oh, this is nice. It's not Chicago. Chicago's is so much more exciting. Just because the floats alone, there's not as many people marching as they're just all on floats dancing. Somehow they get showers on each of those floats too.
Yeah,
it seems like
it's just entertaining
just dancing in water.
When you see a float,
and you know it's like 102 degrees.
What t-shirts?
Yeah, oh, there are no shirts.
Muggy.
They are shirtless.
Yeah. There you go. Well, as we kind of wind down the hour, tell us once again how people can purchase this fabulous wine, or at least connect with you guys.
Okay. Check out our website, www.standtallwine.com. The order form is on there, or you can shoot us an email directly. And we will definitely answer any questions that you have. And like I said, if you live close by, we will deliver it with our dog in tow. And,
you know, if you want to set up a tasting, we can definitely do that as well.
Nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. I like that. Well, we do want to thank you, Dana, Larissa, for bringing your wonderful wine, bringing your wonderful personalities, and just spending the evening with us. This has been a tremendous amount of fun.
And now it's time to barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we can do that. Stand tight. So once again, thanks to our listeners for tuning in. Next week on Outbeat Radio, Greg Moralia will host Outbeat News in Depth. And then Gary, Mary, and I will be back on Sunday, September 15th. Our guests that night will be local author Pamela Fender, Rachel Gardner from Food for Thought. You can listen to Outbeat Radio shows at www.outbeatradio.org. Thank you again for being loyal listeners, and do check out Stand Tall Wine. They're a fabulous, fabulous thing to have on your wine collection. So, thanks, ladies, for being with us tonight, and thanks to all of you for listening.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Hey!